2
3
4
5
6
That should help,
I reckon.
So that helps you. I see you align those up, right?
Yeah.
Is that why we've been doing them all along? Is it?
Is that what? Sorry.
Is that why we've been doing that all along? The counting.
We haven't been doing it all
along. That's the first time we've done it.
Double trick question. Yeah, I double bluffed myself there. Okay.
But does that answer the question?
It's very hard to know.
You're not even sure what the question is in the first place.
I'll have to listen back. Okay. Okay.
So, normally we just do an intro and we just talk about something or other, but...
Well, do we even need to start? I mean, do we...
Pardon?
Do we need to have a bit where we go, welcome to Three Bean Salad or whatever?
Or... You just said it now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. That solved it.
Well, what do you... you think it should kind of... fade up on us having a conversation about Mozart and Salieri or something like what?
Exactly. It's about creating the illusion
that we're in a sort of salon,
that the three of us are in a salon, that we have very, very highbrow but at the same time with a light touch chats.
So Mark Lawson style.
Imagine Mark Lawson as naked as the day he was born.
Is that the light touch element? Imagine Mark Rothko, but he's also naked.
Yeah.
And Evelyn Glennie, the xylophone player, she's naked.
Yeah, and they're all just sitting around on chaise longues around a kind of a swimming pool with a sort of the Tuscan hills behind them.
Right. And we're there as well. Are we naked?
We're naked. We're bobbing about in the pool.
Right.
And we've got a thing that Lawson likes to do, which is we've all had a sort of metal tray strapped to our heads, which with... sausage rolls and canapes and stuff on. Which the rest of the crew get to enjoy, and we just bob around.
Right.
And we get summoned to different sides of the pool. We have to swim along, making sure, obviously, we don't...
With incredible posture.
With incredible posture. If any of their sausage rolls fall into the pool, obviously, Lawson will obviously punish. He'll deal out a Lawson punishment. That sort of vibe. What was the question? It's hard to imagine a question that was the answer to. By the way, I've been thinking about this for a while, but I think we could have a section of the podcast that's called Pompidou. and it's the bits where we discuss how the actual podcast should work.
Why is it called Pompidou?
Because at the Pompidou Centre, you can see...
Oh, I see.
The tubes, you can see the escalators from underneath, can't you? That was the whole breakthrough of it.
Yes, I see.
Which was incredible.
And the ducts.
When it first came out, the Pompidou Centre blew people's absolutely.
Because before that, of course, people didn't believe in pipes, did they?
People had no sense of what was going on in a pipe. Then suddenly, you could see inside pipes. What is there? Wires and smaller pipes.
And feces.
Feces. Well, that's why the Pompidou toilets are really.
They're an iron, aren't they?
They are. I mean, to be fair. Since the 60s, they have sort of... They've become less and less transparent.
Well, that loss of transparency is the great irony, isn't it, of the Pompidou Centre?
It's the great irony. It's become less and less transparent. Yeah. But from the beginning, can you imagine what it was like? This is what they say, isn't it? To have been young, yes, but to have been young in the 60s and watching someone take a dump in the Pompidou Centre, that truly it would
could
be
even,
alive.
It could even be the turn of revered chef... Charles Escoffier, that you might be seeing whizzing past your family.
Oh, exactly. What a time.
I mean, I just want to let you know that the Pompidou Centre opened in 1977, so... I don't know which feces you were watching in the 60s, but...
But anyway, I do think we could have a Pompidou section like that, and...
Sorry, what do you imagine happens in the Pompidou section on the pot?
Well, it's things like this, so we're discussing the actual... We're actually discussing how the podcast, the nuts and bolts. Should we have a little intro? Should we not? And potentially you could have a little Pompidou section theme at the beginning.
Yeah.
Just to go Pompidou or whatever. I don't know how it would go. But.
Do you want me to make one for this episode?
Yes, please.
Okay, can you intro it and I'll drop it in afterwards?
And here is our brand spanking new jungle style Pompidou theme.
Jungle style. Right.
Yeah, I
you yeah.
Chucked you under the bus there. You've got to make it jungle style.
I really don't know what that means musically.
Well, we'll see. Hang on.
I think you're allowed to probably subvert the jungle genre, aren't you? Ben, if it's the Bombadoo section.
Well, does he mean in the jungle genre, as in that's like a sort of fast version of drum and bass, right? Mm. Or does he mean like you could imagine it being played on xylophones by like monkeys and hippos and, you know, like an mbongo?
Had access to a full.
I don't know what he means. Henry, what do you mean?
I'm not entirely sure, actually. So it's up to you, I think.
Maybe a bit of both.
That's what I like to do with my challenges like this is just let you interpret it and see what you come up with.
Okay, I might need a bit of I might need you to say the Pompidou Centre and I can use that as part of the jingle. So can you record that now?
Okay. And now it's time for Pompidou section. Is it Pompidou section?
Well, it's your section, mate.
Okay, and now it's time for a little bit of Pompidou. And now it's time for Pompidou section. Pompidou. Pompidou.
My question for you, Henry, is Visa. Yeah. I'm totally on board with the Pompidou section. I'm just a bit concerned about its potential longevity. I think, you know, we've already had this conversation about whether we do a fade in at the beginning. That's one. I can't imagine what we're talking about next week.
Okay, I mean, I don't want to. I mean, okay. But just put it this way. I wouldn't be surprised if we end up hearing that theme a few more times. Yeah? I'm just going to put it out there that the kind of guys we are.
Sure.
Don't put any money on it necessarily, but yeah, I've got a little feeling here.
I'm also worried, Henry, worried that if you start throwing in new sections in episode 3, by the time we get to episode, 15, there's going to be several sections. If we add a new section every 3 episodes...
You're already worried about the rate of section.
Well, to be fair,
the first section
episode 3 is a very early episode to begin a sort of kind of... sort of self-reflective, introspective, meta, sort of slowly begin the long journey of crawling up into our own arseholes.
Through a transparent tube.
Exactly.
So you're saying we haven't earned Pompidou?
I don't know if we've necessarily earned Pompidou. I'm happy to give Pompidou a go. I think we should just be careful because the path into up your own arsehole, it's a one-way street. And
look, a lot of people, that isn't true, by the way, because by definition, a digestive tract has two entry points, anus and mouth.
No, it's only going one way, isn't it?
Unless something's gone very wrong, classically.
You can't eat.
In a perfect world, Ben. We don't live in a perfect world.
We talked last week about how an octopus has a combi anus mouth. So...
Yeah.
The animal world does...
Oh, I've just thought another section we could have.
I think it's time, isn't it?
Digestive tract talk.
You're laying down the train tracks as the train is careering out of control.
That's what Dr. Pompidou is doing with sections of transparent tubes by the end of his life.
So the whole reason...
He's walking around. sections of transparent tube and walking through them as he went around.
Or was it because it wasn't actually a planned design? It was purely because he hadn't done his homework and then he supposed to design an entire municipal building.
But also,
shit, what am I going to do? And he was just caught drawing it on the little bench outside the meeting room. This is deliberate. I'm just... you can see the tube,
by the way.
Yeah, this is intentional.
This is another section we could do. But
hang on.
Go on.
Okay. It absolutely wasn't designed by a man called Dr.
Yeah. Are you sure? Are you sure?
Yes. Pompidou was the president of France in the 70s.
Oh, I see. Oh, right. So, okay.
Anyway, sorry, Henry, you were about to introduce yet another section.
Oh, bollocks.
What was the first one? What was the second one going to be? That we had Pompidou and then
digestive tract talk. Because things would come up. Oh, royal family could be one. I mean, there are already themes that would keep coming back.
What's
anything to do with
just going back to digestive tract talk? What genre of jingle would you like for that?
I think Baroque harpsichord.
Okay. Can you just give me the voice that I can put over the Baroque harpsichord?
Digestive tract talk.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, no.
Is that... Was that okay? I was thinking Mozart... Is he Baroque? No. I was thinking, like, Bach.
Bach's Baroque, certainly, yeah. So that was your impression of Bach?
Yeah, kind of... Is he Vienna? Kind of, is he Viennese?
Are you telling us that was specifically Viennese?
Yeah, I was going for a
and specifically
mid-Europe, lowlands, mid-Europe imperial.
Yeah, I thought it was very good.
Yeah, bit of Habsburg in there,
just a touch though.
The kind of accent that would go well with having about 50 medals on your lapel, even though you've never lifted a bloody sword.
Didn't sound that military to me, Henry.
Well, okay, this isn't about politics, but I've always had a bit of a thing about the Habsburgs. You know, you don't get me on the, you don't get me on the Habsburgs if you want to have a good night, because I'll ruin any night out.
Is that another section? Habsburg section?
I was satirizing the Habsburgs by giving them that voice. That was the point I was making.
Oh, I see.
I don't know a lot about the Habsburgs, I'm going to be honest.
I think we know that, Henry. Deep down.
Okay.
So if I'm going to go to the trouble of making a jingle for digestive tract section, what goes in it?
Must come out. Eh? Sorry.
God.
In terms of the musical style, I've told you, harpsichord, Baroque, I mean, how much more do you want to... Digestive tract talk. Oh yeah.
So I make your Baroque harpsichord version of the jingle, and then the jingle dies out.
Yes.
What do we hear then?
Is that when we hear that digestive tract? No, then it's us talking. No. What do you want? Another line?
No.
I think it's just going to be digestive tract talk, and then you hear the jingle that fades out, and then we're talking about digestive tract.
What? And you're just going to say something pithy about a bile duct or something?
No, the way I see this working is as a post-edit thing. So basically, if we end up talking about digestive tracts in post, Ben goes in and sticks in.
This is a bit of Pompidou now.
Exactly, we're Pompidouing during a digestive tract talk. It's quite an advanced. Quite advanced.
Are you pre
in terms of jingles? Good luck writing the jingle.
Are
for
you
that.
Pre-Pompidouing?
Pre-Pompidouing.
I mean, one person might say you're Pompidouing, another person might say you're tearing away at the very threads that hold together this podcast.
the delicate threads, as they are.
The very fabric of what we're doing has been completely destroyed.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's high stakes, yeah.
Okay, great. So we're now ready for future Pompidou sections and ready for future digestive tract sections. It feels like a strong position to start the actual show proper.
Yeah, there's nothing in this episode's digestive tract section. It's just as far as we know, it's just kind of empty.
Just good, clean fun.
It's just all it's got is just the natural bacteria that live in there anyway.
The natural bacteria of chat.
Exactly.
So see if you can hear them
constantly
squelching away in the background.
The Yakult of banter.
Indeed.
Constantly.
As we discuss Rome.
Yeah.
Rome, is it? This episode?
Rome.
This is another one. Again, we're sort of making a mockery of the format here because, again, we recorded this before we even put out the first episode. So this one, again, was suggested by our friend Gareth, who suggested the theme Rome. But soon we'll
put on your sandals, get on a...
Donkey?
get on a donkey.
Get on a Vespa donkey.
Get on a Vespa donkey and make sure you got some of Mama's a best of salami.
Oh, no.
That's not going in.
Today's theme is Rome. Rome.
Mm. Rome.
City of Rome.
Oh, just so, so primal, so, isn't it? So, just the city, the eternal city, the city that's in our, that's in my DNA, certainly.
Your mixture of Turkish and English DNA.
But if you draw a line between Turkey and the UK, what's halfway?
Rome.
Probably Bulgaria or somewhere like that.
But all roads lead to Rome, so it depends how you look at it. From a map point of view, you're always halfway to Rome, pretty much wherever you are. You mean? The cradle of...
Certainly the cradle of public baths.
The cradle of public baths.
And wiping your ass with the sponge, that's the thing I remember mostly about the Romans.
About your visit to Rome?
Yeah. Have you ever been to Rome? You have to wipe your ass with the same sponge. Everyone in Rome hands around the same one.
That wasn't exclusively Roman, though. Your medieval seafarer enjoyed the same
oh, really?
Trick. Yeah, there's a... Where is it? Not far from me. There's a mock-up of St. Francis Drake's old gaff. And the main attraction for... Yeah, the ship, the tiny ship that he used to sail about and, you know...
The Golden Hind.
The Hind. That's him.
It was much smaller than you think, isn't it?
It's very small, but they were smaller as well, of course.
They were smaller.
Times, they were much smaller.
But it was almost like one of those tiny Fiats you see going around, like a sort of smart car, but a ship, wasn't it? It was just him and one other crew member.
Oh, it was very much a commuter city ship.
Yeah.
It wasn't, yeah. But he used it long range.
Yeah.
And the thing the kids get excited about is the fact that right at the back, there's a shitty stick with a sponge on the end. But they were a bit more canny because they could at least, when they were done, it was on a chain and they'd chuck it over the back. And the force of the sea would rinse it clean for the next arse.
And was that a living sponge then? Your luck's not in, is it? I
think it would have been living, or at least not for long.
If it's being put back in the water between uses.
You think it would have been the most savage of all deaths for...
Well, no, I think it would be praying for death, but it'd be like, please let this be the last sort of scurvy-ridden bum crack that I have to... spend time in.
The coup d'arse.
Be praying to dry out and die, and then be just chucked back in that chain into the sea just to resuscitate it again.
It's the most perfect...
most perfect torture.
If you brought a Roman to a modern bathroom and asked him to have a shit, would he then take the toilet brush and use that on his... That's the closest thing we have to a sponge on a stick in the modern bathroom.
Yeah, he'd be forgiven for doing that, wouldn't he, I think.
Another thing a Roman might do is he might go, look, how am I supposed to go just sitting here on my own? I can't go unless upwards of 30 people are watching.
I need to be discussing the matters of state.
I need to be discussing matters of state with, you know, a good 30 or so of my peers.
Before it can trigger any sort of evacuation.
Yeah,
I need to hear the ribald philosophy of Cicero and...
Budge up, mate. Cicero's come in. All right. And everyone moves up a seat, do you? And then Cicero comes in.
You move up a seat and then you know it's time you better crack a window as well, because once Cicero gets going, then everything gets going.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Cicero was the equivalent of a morning coffee, I think, for Romans.
Yeah.
Wasn't
yeah,
it?
You'd, so.
Cicero started doing some rhetoric and you'd loosen you up.
I sort of can't go if someone's eyeballing me.
It's literally a nightmare, isn't it? It's something you might have nightmares about, is not being private in that state.
So what happened to humanity?
How did we go from that? And who first put the lock on the toilet door? Was it the Emperor Augustus?
I mean, it's the beginning of individualism as the building block of human civilization.
So you're saying, well, this is the start of the American dream, you're saying?
Well, democracy, capitalism, yeah. None of that would have happened if we were still sort of communally shitting.
So do you think the very modern idea of the self...
Yeah.
...comes
Before
from that?
Before we were like bees or ants, we were just part of the...
The hive brain.
Yeah. Part of the swarm.
Yeah.
And then someone locked themselves in, did a private shit, and suddenly they were like, hang on. I'm an individual with my own wants and needs.
And they looked down and went, hang on, these are my knees. These knees don't belong to anyone else. I always thought that there was just loads of knees in a room, loads of faces, and quite a bad smell. That all began. That's an interesting thought. I wonder when that came in. Would that be to do with the Enlightenment, maybe?
Leonardo da Vinci was the first person to shit alone.
Well, he famously drew a solo toilet cubicle, didn't he? It was one of his many inventions that at the time.
He invented the stall.
Which people
often mistakenly think was a design for a helicopter, but it was actually a fan. That was the first ventilated toilet cubicle.
And their mistake was trying to make it fly.
One thing they say about Rome is they say, yes, but the food isn't very good.
Who says that?
Middle class tossers.
Because what you really would need to be going is Bologna.
Bologna.
Yeah, people do say that.
Well, I think the perception of food in Rome is that Rome, you know, like the food in Italy is amazing, but you know, like your local sort of Italian in Britain, you sort of like lasagna, spag bowl, big pepper pot.
The ratio of the pepper pot, the size of the height of the pepper pot to the waiter is important.
Yeah, crucial.
Yeah. It should be about sort of one to two.
So two of the waiters, if the waiter could fit inside the pepper pot twice.
Exactly, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. But that classic sort of bog standard, that's the food in Rome.
So where do you go then in Italy for your
food?
I think
the thing is, I think Rome doesn't have a thing, does it? So like if you want pizza, you go to Napoli because that's where the pizza's from. If you want bolognese, you go to Bologna.
Right.
If you want lemons, you go to the Sorrento, I discovered. That happens in Italy. Each town or bit you go to has like one food.
Exactly.
So you go to Sorrento, it's lemons. Like everything's lemons. There's huge lemons on sale everywhere. There's pictures of lemons. There's posters of lemons. People with lemon hats. It's just lemon. There's the drink limoncello. There's always a local liqueur as well based on that product, which they offer you at the end of your meal. So in Bologna, it's a bolognese liqueur.
Sorry.
Which the waiter gives you at the end.
Heady digestive at the end of your meal.
It really is.
It's not much of a palate cleanser, is it? But it does the job. It does the business.
There's a film, isn't there, called Roman Holiday?
Oh, that's a Cliff Richard one, isn't it?
No, that's Summer Holiday.
Summer Holiday. Which one's Roman Holiday?
With the young ones. Roman Holiday is quite a bit different. It's because it's more Cary Grant than Adrian Edmondson.
Yeah.
It's one of those 60s capers kind of films, is it?
Oh, okay.
Cary Grant, I assume, plays some sort of spy.
I watched my first Cary Grant film over Christmas. I'd never seen one before.
He's from the era of stars, Cary Grant, where before they were like buff.
Well, that's what I liked about it, is that he was the world's heartthrob, but he just looks like someone's dad.
Totally. And
he's good looking,
but you can tell he doesn't have that insane body that actors have to have now.
Well, they would occasionally unbutton a shirt in those movies as well, you know.
Yeah.
You know, and you would see a flash of hairy chest, but there was zero definition. I mean, even there's no V-shape anywhere, possibly a bit of pigeon chest going on, slightly skinny arms, upper arms the same girth as the forearms. Where did it all go wrong? What was wrong with that? What was wrong with that? That's fine, isn't it?
Like, what's his face? Kirk Douglas had that kind of
He had a bit of tone. They were flat pecs, but you could tell that they had a good twitch on them, right? As opposed to a sort of great big heaving pair of sort of muscle tits, which is now the expectation. And it's a lot of work. Jesus.
To keep those muscle tits going. Yeah. Because also you're on a horrible tightrope where as soon as you stop exercising, they just turn into regular tits.
Yeah. Yeah. But also you could tell that like Cary Grant, he's never he's always just basically either standing up or sitting down. And you'd have like an entire sort of thriller or but he's just either standing up or sitting down.
He might do both within one scene occasionally, but very rarely. Yeah.
Well, there might be that. Probably the finale. Oh, the finale scene might involve him initially sitting down and having to stand up. But like you never see them running. Like I've got no image of.
And even if he's going to exert himself to that degree, they'll make sure that they write into the scene that he does get a drink at some point during the scene, so he's refreshed.
Yeah, there's just no physical agility sort of needed, is there? They've got no kind of... The range of motion is very narrow in those stars. James Stewart as well, just always standing up. Just picture him now, he's standing up, isn't he? Or sitting down. Whereas you picture Hugh Jackman, he's always upside down, he's dangling off something. Or Tom Cruise. I literally can't picture Tom Cruise standing up or sitting down. I can only picture him running. or possibly flying through the air or dangling on something upside down. Do you know what I mean? Like, they're always on the move.
He won't run downstairs. That's my only Tom Cruise fact.
Is that because his knees only hinge one way?
No. I think this
is like a horse.
It's apocryphal. I mean, I've got this off a man who got it off another man who got it off another man.
Does he sleep standing up as well?
Who was in a on some shoot with him. Apparently going through for one of the Mission Impossibles, going through a stunt sequence, and the stunt guy is going, and then you run down these stairs. He said, no. Tom Cruise does not run downstairs. Tom Cruise only runs upstairs. Allow me to demonstrate. And then he ran up some stairs like a bloody gazelle, looking just like a sleek piece of action beauty, and then went downstairs. Suddenly his gait goes very wide. And he's sort of flapping about very wide. His feet are about 2 meters apart. He's very unsteady, very unsure of himself.
Is that because he spends hours a day on a Stairmaster just working out?
He goes one way. So maybe.
The muscles only go one way.
Mm. He's overtrained them to go in one direction.
Yeah, so he's just keep going up.
I think also horses can't go downstairs. I don't know how I know that, but I'm pretty sure that's true.
I think cows can't go upstairs.
Right. Is that true?
Also, pigs can't look up.
Yes, I've heard that before.
They've never seen the sky.
Wow, that's so sad. Next time I see a pig, I'm going to pick it up and point its head towards the sky.
Look at that!
Look at that, mate. So Tom Cruise can't run downstairs. So if they need him to run downstairs in a Mission Impossible film, they'd have to build a kind of M.C. Escher staircase thing where he's actually running up, but looks like he's running down.
That's what Mission Impossible refers to. Just a big set of stairs.
Mission Impossible is getting. Can you grab that? That bag of
Nuclear codes.
Can you grab that bag of nuclear codes that I stuck down in the basement?
No. For the first time in this franchise, I'm going to say no. I can't deliver that.
I'm going to reverse the Earth's gravitational pull so that I jump down the stairs.
Well, if you pushed him down the stairs, would he fall down the stairs quickly?
He can fall down a set of stairs, no trouble.
Okay.
He can walk downstairs, he can hop downstairs, he can ride a motorcycle downstairs. What he can't do is run downstairs. What have we not discussed with Rome?
Centurions.
Love a centurion.
There's little shin pads they've got.
Yeah, good shin pads and war sandals as well, which always seemed very brave to me.
Good war sandals, yeah.
Gladiators?
The film Gladiator.
What a great movie.
Stands up very well, that film.
Have you seen it recently?
I've seen it the last few years. It stands up incredibly well, Gladiator.
Yeah?
It's unbelievable how well it stands up. It's just terrific.
You like all the big battle scenes, do you? You just like seeing some
big battle scenes.
Visigoths getting mashed up.
I love the battle scenes.
Mm-hmm. Do you like the bit where he's running his fingers through some wheat? That's all I remember.
He does that a lot.
One of my favourite bits. Mm-hmm. Yeah. He does that at the beginning. And he does it through various points throughout. Yeah.
I think he does it at the end because I think when he gets sent to heaven, it turns out he gets sent to a wheat field as well, which would be a bit galling after all you've been through.
Yeah.
This is it. It's a bloody wheat field.
Harvest that.
Yeah. Forever.
Well, I can't just have loads of grain that's pre.
I can't just have a sandwich. Can I just have a cheese and pickle sandwich? I'm starving. I've been fighting all day.
No, here's a field of wheat.
Now run your fingers through it. Forever.
There is, of course, such a thing as the Roman candle.
The spinny firework? Mm.
No, that's a Catherine wheel, you fool.
Oh, sorry.
Which one's the Roman candle, then?
That's just a little thing in the ground.
Oh, yeah.
Going upwards.
Right, you are.
We didn't discuss the whole sort of massacring of Christians stuff. Because is that what Roman candles to do with?
Oh, I don't know.
I've got it in my mind that it's to do with setting fire to Christians.
And we celebrate that.
At children's parties.
We haven't yet discussed Romulus and Remus suckling a wolf.
Quite a weird origin story that, isn't it, for a city?
Especially when most cities don't really feel the need to have one, I don't think.
Yes.
You don't go to Coventry and they say, well, this all started when, you know, a little girl suckled an eagle or something.
Yeah, no, you don't go to a town and go, God, this is an interesting place. So tell me, who suckled who?
Who suckled what?
Who suckled what? No, what suckled who?
Yeah.
What suckled who to make this place?
Go on, ask me. Yeah. Come on. Spit it out. Am I being so cagey? Someone must have sunk or something.
When the council build a sort of new development on the outskirts of a town, maybe like a new town, when they built Milton Keynes, the local council members had to suckle various animals before.
Yeah, often there would be a prize draw for something like that to see who wants to be suckled by what, and you know, people, you know, get involved. Right.
Or you did go to a place that's a bit of a dump and go, God, I reckon a probably a lizard probably suckled a bat. I reckon.
God, this place looks like a lizard suckled a bat. What a slam.
And it ended up, after that suckling, it was Rome. It wasn't Ream.
Romulus got the greatest city in the world named after him, and Ream got a quantity of printer paper.
I wonder if his adults, they ever went back to the wolf teat.
To go and visit the she-wolf in a nursing home. I'm sure she has some fresh-cut flowers.
My boys. They never come and visit. I miss the feel of them.
Latch on to that. Have a suckle, go on.
Mum. God, that's embarrassing.
I'm a king now. I'm a king of a massive city.
I founded a city.
Go on, I've got 8 nipples. One of them be good.
Rome's done quite well in the sort of international city-based phrase world. Rome wasn't built in a day being the principal one, I think.
Yeah, so it's got two phrases. It's got Rome wasn't built in a day and all roads lead to Rome. It's a two-phrase city. London's a one-phrase city, which is, if you're bored of London, you're bored of life.
New York has got so good they had to name it twice.
Paris has got a half one. Is Paris in the spring? ... Fill in the blank.
Berlin has got... Berlin is a sort of decent weekend away.
By the way, there's a third Rome phrase that actually we forgot. It's not a two... It's a three-phrase city.
Go on.
When in Rome.
Of course.
When in Rome. It's a big one.
It's got three phrases.
It's got the hat trick.
That's huge.
When in Rome.
And that means... I guess it means kind of...
Wipe your ass with a sponge. Yeah.
Guys, I'm about to blow your mind.
Go on.
You ready?
There's not a fourth phrase, is there?
I think currently we're, with our three phrases, we're fiddling while Rome burns.
Ooh. Oh my lordy. It's got so many phrases. You know, I always thought that phrase meant fiddling as in fiddling with something, like fiddling with your fingers or fiddling.
Is it playing the violin, doing your violin practice?
It's playing the violin while Rome burns.
Is it?
Yeah, because allegedly Nero did that because he was such an absolute prick.
He was doing his violin practice.
What, so while Rome was burning down, he was playing the violin?
I think so. I think I may have learned that from In Our Time with Melvin Bragg.
Do you think of the violin as a very Nero-era instrument?
There's a lot of stuff that you don't think the Romans had, but they did have.
Like plasma TVs?
They had plasma TVs. People just assume they didn't, just because they didn't have electricity.
But they did have violins and plasma TVs. We've established these
had
two.
Violins at least. And plasma TVs. And they had Alexa.
But she was called Alexis.
She was called Alexis.
And she was just a box full of slaves.
Yeah.
She's a box full of slaves. And you'd ask them a question, they'd run off, and a couple of days later, they'd come back with the answer.
Tell you when Sergeant Pepper's Lonely Hearts Club Band was first released.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Rome.
Rome. Rome.
So that was Rome. May it stand proudly for another 2,000 years, but only 2,000 years.
And then make it fall really, really just dramatically over the course of like an afternoon.
Well, it would make a bloody good car park.
It would.
It's absolutely ideally located.
Such good access.
Near the airport. Mm.
But the problem is it's ideally located for Rome, which would no longer be there because it would then be a car park. So it's kind of a chicken and egg thing.
You know what? There's actually been some Rome news.
Since we recorded that?
Yeah. They're doing something at the Colosseum where...
They're bringing back gladiators.
I think they're bringing back gladiators. That's going to be huge. It's going to be huge. It's that thing about politics becoming more populist. I think that's... It was always heading that way. It's what the people
that's
want.
That's actually what they want, as it turns out.
That's genuinely what people
edging
want.
Edging towards slowly.
Yeah.
Watching a local councillor getting ripped apart by a tiger.
Exactly.
What are they actually doing in the Colosseum, Henry?
No, it's something like that. No, they're not bringing... But it's something like you're going to be able to know what it was like to be a gladiator by standing... I think it was something to do with standing on a special platform or something. They've built a special platform or something.
Oh, yeah.
Then Russell Crowe comes out and beats you across the head with a stick.
Beats you to help. There's a gladiator experience where you get to feel what it was like to be a...
I assume it was to be a gladiator or possibly to have worked on the film Gladiator. One or the
other. So you stand on a special platform, you put a VR headset on,
yeah,
and then an yeah. animated...
Visit Russell Crowe's Winnebago.
His character tells you to go and bring a bacon panini to Russell Crowe
yeah.
and look yeah. sharp about it and make sure it doesn't get cold.
Where's my panini?
You hear that from far left.
Really visceral experience.
Will you get the right panini in our interactive Russell Crowe panini challenge? Don't make him angry. Experience the difficulties they had getting the light right on certain days in our Join the Cameraman experience.
Ooh, this intermittent cloud passing overhead. What are they going to do?
Listen, mate, if we don't get the right fucking angles, I'm going to fucking kill a lot of you.
This is why I said we should have done it in fucking green screen. Fucking plans.
And where's my fucking panini?
Put on our special gladiator outfit with a sort of scabbard for the panini. That's what Russell Crowe insisted, that his runner on that was dressed as a gladiator with like five scabbards, each of which had a different panini flavour in it.
In a sort of thermos technology panini scabbards.
Exactly. Yeah. Kept it piping hot. It's got me piping hot all day, mate. Yeah. You don't understand what actors have to go through.
Do you want Mr. Crowe to...
I want a fucking salami panini
do
now.
Do you mind if I make a panini later on for when you want it later on? You would...
No, just get it out of your fucking scabbard. Why do you think I have the fucking scabbard designed for you, mate?
I'm afraid we're out of salami. Would you mind if it was a prosciutto panini?
That's in your quiver. You got a fucking salami quiver on your back, mate. Yeah? You got salami. Listen, mate, how many times do I have to explain this to you, right? The salamis are in the quiver, the paninis are in the scabbards, yeah? It's not rocket science, mate.
It was actually just a coincidence as well. In every film he filmed previous to Gladiator, he had a runner dressed as a gladiator with scabbards full of paninis. It just happened to seem more
the
apt.
Clock
when he was
struck twice.
He actually had a bit of a crisis of confidence about it, and he talked to his agent about that. He's like, oh, this is the first time, mate. I'm just a little bit worried because, you know... You know how I always have a runner dressed as a gladiator?
Of course, Russell, yeah. Yeah, you do get through them, Russell. They don't tend to last, but yeah, carry on anyway, yeah.
And then after 6 months, I murder them.
Yeah. Well, that was fine on LA Confidential, right? It was fine on all my previous films. It was fine on the one where I play a skinhead, LA Confidential, yeah. Well, I'm just worried with Gladiator, right? It's just a bit weird. You know, people are going to think it's a bit weird because the film actually is about a gladiator. Sorry, I've got a couple of olives in my throat, mate. Yeah, well, it's my breakfast.
They've come from his breakfast slingshot. He's just slung them in. He slung them in a bit hard.
He went down the wrong way. You know what I mean? He does love, yeah. And anyway, yeah, so, but anyway, listen, as long as I've got a hot boiled egg in a trebuchet lined up, ready to go, 5 a.m. every day, oh, I should be fine.
Yeah, so that was Rome. Thank you to everyone who has sent us emails to the email address 3beansaladpod@gmail.com. We've had lots of lovely emails. We haven't got time to read them all out, but there's one that I wanted to read out to you chaps. This is from Simone. Mm-hmm. We had a few on the same theme. Hello beans, can we get an update on Henry's bean anecdote? This is from episode 1.
Of course.
Has he now eaten all the beans? Has the bean smell dissipated? Is the anecdote still hot? We also have another email which I'll read out before you come to answer that. Dear beans, it is not necessary to boil beans for an hour or over. Leave them in a bowl of water in the fridge for a minimum 7 hours or longer overnight, then boil them in a large pan of salted water and they'll be ready to eat in 25 to 30 minutes. If left even longer, like 48 hours to soak, they can be cooked in as little as 20 minutes. They will retain their shape, colour and nutrients. If the bean dish includes brown rice, save time and cook them both together. This is getting quite complicated now. Sieve and rinse with boiled water, drain and you are good to go. Equally, if a slow sauce is being made, part of the beans cooking can be done in the sauce by adding them. It's not World War II.
Well, people often approach controversial topics like bean preparation with such certainty, don't they? Even though there are so many grey areas. and grey beans.
It is like World War
II. I mean, what do you feel about that? That so attack on your technique? And it was an attack.
One thing I'd say is just saying things like it's not World War II doesn't mean it is World War II.
Well, they're right, it isn't World War II.
In this case, it isn't World War II. That's all I'll concede.
It does feel like that's from what strengthened their argument about the beans, because they've started on a... They're absolutely right about the last bit, which makes me sort of assume that they must be right about the previous bit. But are they?
Well, they're using a rhetorical technique,
World War II technique,
which is you say something with absolute bollocks, and then you say something true at the end.
Yeah, that it wasn't World War II.
And as we know, that's the only bit people really listen to. You know what I mean? 2 and 2 is 4. I've just done it there.
Yeah. So you're saying the thing you said before that was bollocks?
Probably.
But that's a huge paradox, isn't it? Because what you were describing was exactly the thing that you then went on to do. We're now trapped in a kaleidoscope of paradox.
You've hugely undermined yourself, Henry, with a single stroke.
Okay. Look, guys. Let's get this puppy in the water. Let's get this puppy in the water. Yeah. Get it splashing about. Look at its little pink tongue sticking out. Look at how cute it is. It can't swim yet, though. So let's get it out again and dry it down with a towel. It looks even cuter now, doesn't it?
First things first, is the anecdote still hot? I think that's what the nation is waiting to hear with bated breath.
Okay, I'll tell you what happened with the beans. So I ate 80% of the beans.
Mm-hmm. Just as a recap to people who haven't listened to the first episode, you boiled beans for hours and hours and hours, filling your house with a beanie fug, and they all went grey.
So that the remaining 20%, your wife and your cat had to share the remaining 20% as you gorged yourself on 80% of the beans.
No, what happened was I'm going to say plodded our way through the beans.
Okay.
And I tried putting them in salads. Nothing worked.
Despite all of those innovative ideas.
I couldn't make those beans sing. I've just got to be honest. I couldn't. Mm. And you know what happened, though, by the end, right? So there was about 20% of the beans left. I don't know why. For some reason, they were being stored in a cart door ice cream plastic box.
You don't need to necessarily focus on your storage solutions at this point. Yeah. I'd probably move on.
Sorry.
I'd move on hard.
So here's the point. The point is, I slightly forgot. I was eating beans quite a lot, and I wasn't hugely enjoying them, if I'm honest. A lot of that's probably down to me and not the beans. Not being good at preparing.
Very generous of you.
I lost track of... I sort of forgot about the 20% of the beans, right? That were still in the fridge. Then, what happened was, people started to notice a weird smell in the flat.
People?
My wife and me started to notice a weird smell in the flat, right? And basically, it's just hit you every now and then. And I kept on opening the fridge and looking around. I just couldn't identify what could be the source of this smell. And this smell was...
Dead magpie.
It wasn't dead magpie. It was... do you know the smell which is like... it's almost like a sickly sweet... too much fecundity, kind of sordid, like papayas, old papayas, or old, you know, like the sense.
I was with you at the beginning, and then you lost me at old papayas.
But you know that sense of like too much sweetness, too much.
That's what I'm going to call you from now on, Mike. Old papayas.
Old papayas. But do you know, people sometimes talk about that. It was a sickly smell, like a tropical kind of like. Too much tropical fruit that's gone hot and gone too ripe.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Anyway, I just thought, I've got no idea what was making that smell in here. I must be imagining it, or my nose
is imagining
all
it.
Of our noses here are imagining it. I've just gone maybe collectively mad. You hear about it, that kind of thing. Anyway, it turns out it was actually the beans. It was the 20% of the beans.
Well, I guess that bit, because the story started with the beans. So, I mean, you were building up to a big reveal there, but I think probably most of our listeners thought it's the beans.
It was a bit Line of Duty finale. Yeah,
it was Inspector Beans.
That wasn't a very good twist, was it? But, but it turns out that beans are one of those things which when they go off hard, they go off fast.
They go off fruity.
They go off fruity. Because I thought that beans were kind of things that you could probably just have sitting around sitting in the fridge like for
and they'd eventually just sort of fade away like Obi-Wan Kenobi, and that would be that.
But, but it turns out they turn on you fast and hard. Yeah. And it's like there is a narrow window where it's like you've got to enjoy them. And if you miss it, you're like, you are out in the cold. And fucking hell, it's scary.
And what steps have you taken since then? I mean, is it a cold dead anecdote now, or is it still in play?
I think the anecdote has reached its natural conclusion. Uh-huh. Which is, I threw the beans away. Mm-hmm. I didn't have any plans to buy beans.
Yep.
I do have some chickpeas that I bought on the same supermarket trip.
That's a nice little teaser twist at the end, isn't it? A little, has he learned his lesson, really? Little shot of Henry Packer picking up the chickpeas.
Well, it's like the end of the horror film, isn't it? It's the end of the horror film where you think he's dealt with it and then suddenly, hang on.
He's buying some chickpeas.
He's buying some chickpeas. It's blood-curdling. Absolutely blood-curdling moment.
Okay. I wish you all the best, Henry, with the chickpeas.
Mm.
Thank you.
Yeah, keep us posted.
But any advice, I suppose, on what I could have done with it? I think it was called 10-bean mix. Is that possible? There's a lot of different beans in there.
We just had a lot of advice. It was all about if you soak them for longer, you only have to cook them for 25 minutes, and then they retain their colour.
Yeah. Well, you're not listening.
That advice didn't grab me. It could be some advice that's a bit more grabbing. It still felt like he was moving around the same basic parts, which is a fridge, some beans,
large amounts of time,
and amounts of time,
and the Western Front of World War II.
He was moving chairs around on the Titanic. Do you know what I mean? It's just moving. It's just look. It's the same. It doesn't matter where these chairs go. We need to get on a bloody life. I don't care if the string quartet are still playing and we now get excellent seats.
The irony, of course, there is the beans on the Titanic are just now, this year, coming in to be ready.
After over a century of soaking.
Yeah.
That feels like a kind of oligarch's one of those like incredibly expensive dishes.
Yeah.
the most expensive vegetarian dish on earth. £450,000 for beans soaked on the Titanic. The Titanic beans.
They're going to have a lovely briny texture to them, aren't they?
Oh, lovely.
I know.
Be briny. They
have a real tang.
There'll be a lot of shark puke on them, all kinds of ways.
Yeah, a couple of old deep sea crab pubes. Served in a captain's hat.
We've also had lots of nice emails suggesting topics. They've all gone in the hat. For example, someone called Dominic Montefiore writes, "Good afternoon. Please could you talk about Dominic Montefiore? Yours sincerely, Dominic Montefiore."
You know what? I wouldn't mind talking to Dominic Montefiore.
Yeah, put it in the hat.
It's gone in the hat. It's gone in the hat. Yeah. So there's every chance it'll come up.
I'd feel there's a lot of pressure on him to be living an exciting life at all times, though.
Yeah, you can't just sort of wander around Co-op when you're called Dominic Montefiore, can you?
You can't just pop down to Co-op to get some ham.
No, you need to be on the phone to a vintner almost all the time. So Dominic, thank you for that. That'll go in the hat. And thank you for everyone else who sent those in. They've all gone in the big hat. I'm looking forward to pulling some out of the hat. It will be in a few weeks' time,
isn't it?
It's quite a big, heavy hat at the moment.
It's a big, heavy hat. And we've been, and bless good old Gareth. You know, he's done his bit, and we're nearing the end of Gareth's little hat, his pre hat. But it'll be good. It'll be good to get in the hat proper.
Yeah.
So that's the episode for this week. We'll be back next week. Until then, nanu nanu.
Beans.
Cheerio.